Our first guest today is Autumn Lamb, who is the barista here.
Yes.
You're behind the counter, mixing up all the concoctions.
Creating delicious beverages in the morning.
How long have you been doing this?
I actually just started beginning of August, so just a few months.
Did you have any previous experience? How do you know what to make and how to make it? What?
Well,
yeah, I need to know these things. She just walked in the door. I want to know how she knows all. This is a very complicated operation.
Sometime in her life she made coffee. I think that would have happened.
I think there's more to it than that.
Okay. Autumn?
I love coffee and everything about coffee. I have actually had an opportunity to travel to a coffee farm in Haiti and meet with coffee growers and grinders and roasters and all that sort of stuff. So to me, it's a passion. I was looking for a little something to do on the side and thought, what better than to work in a coffee shop?
What does it smell like at a coffee farm? Is it agricultural or is there sort of...
very agricultural. We had to drive up to the mountains and then walk down a bunch of different muddy red clay trails and things like that. And walk past a bull, and there was pigs on the farm, and then there was coffee trees and all of the other different things that they grow there. It was a pretty surreal experience.
Coffee grows on trees, Craig.
It does.
We got to write these things down.
No, we don't know. So, like Bruce said, though, here you walk in and you can smell the aroma. Mm-hmm. Come up to the counter, you can smell it. Can you actually smell it on the farm?
Not necessarily, no. When I was there, it was not harvest time. There was nothing drying or roasting or anything like that. When they were brewing the coffee, I could smell all of the aroma during the brewing process and when they were serving it to us, of course. But just walking up into the farm, I didn't really smell coffee.
Now, did that ruin that taste of that coffee, ruin that area of the coffee from that point forward? Because if this is a coffee that's not too far from the time, I mean, it's one of those kind of like from farm to table kind of a thing. Sort of.
I was about 5 feet away from the actual coffee tree that had the unripe coffee cherries on it while I was drinking this coffee made by a lovely lady who had grown it, dried it, harvested it, roasted it, ground it, brewed it, and served it.
Wow.
It was phenomenal.
And you got to drink it.
I got to drink it, and it was the most surreal and most amazing coffee experience of my life.
Well, this maybe ties into some of your travels that you also do, Craig, right? That we were talking about this morning.
Tell us a little bit about what you do beyond here at Arabica.
Sure. So I work with an organization. It's a nonprofit called A Parent Project based in Port-au-Prince, Haiti. I work with communications and fundraising for the organization. I love to be able to share about what we do. Our whole focus is to empower Haitian families. We do that through sales, through early childhood, through childcare, and through job skills training for adults. And really our focus is to build this next generation of change agents. And we believe it's critical if you work with young children, if you have parents who are working, they can keep families together and help change that cycle of poverty. And then if you care for the family in ways that are meaningful to them, have safe, caring, loving, nurturing childcare for these children to go to while parents are working, it's absolutely critical. And then education is what's really going to make the difference for a better Haiti going forward. Children who are educated, who love their country, who love their community, who aren't just getting an education to try and leave and come to the States, but actually to stay in their country and really be able to make changes going forward. So that's our focus there.
Are you investing there, or do you have actually people on the ground helping out as well?
Majority of our staff is Haitian in Haiti. We just have a really small skeleton crew here in the United States that handles some of the logistics, the technical things, shipping products that they sell to us. But the vast majority of people who are doing the work for a parent project are in Port-au-Prince.
How would you describe that land, that territory, to somebody who's never been there? They don't know what to expect.
Sure. That's actually one of the largest challenges that I come up with trying to explain it. It's really hard for our North American brain to process. It's, Haiti's in our backyard. It's a 90-minute flight from Miami. It's the other side of the island of the Dominican Republic. But when you go there, it is so completely different. It's a sensory experience. The smells are different. The sights are different. The sounds are different. But it's absolutely gorgeous, and it's paired with the realities of a grinding poverty at the same time. It's so hard to put into words. honestly, without being there. You could smell it and see it. And
how do the people there earn a living?
The vast majority of people there work on like little side markets, what they call a mache, which is if you ever see pictures where people are lined up along the sides of the street, they've got their little market with their foods and their biscuits and canned items and clothing and shoes and whatever it is that they need to sell. A huge majority, that's what they do. Some are in the cleaning industry. There's a very small upper class that handles most of the government and the police and the those sorts of positions, but I'd say probably about 80% of the country is just either farmers or mache owners.
Do they depend a lot on people visiting, tourists?
There is some of that. There's some dependency on there. A lot of it's just kind of interacting with each other, buying from each other and selling to each other and things like that. It's a challenging thing because you don't want to have this dependence on outside help. It's really more important to help develop from within. But yeah, so there's some of that that happens.
Yeah. How did you make that connection to this group?
I was working with a different organization at the time when I first traveled to Haiti, and I had an opportunity to go there on a trip to meet artisans who were creating jewelry that I had been selling here in the United States. And when I was down there, I learned more about a parent project, and then over the course of the following year, had an opportunity to spend several weeks in Haiti, connected with the director of a parent project, Marilyn Monaghan, and her and I just hit it off right away, and over time, I've just been able to offer more and more things that I can do and help them out, and I love it. Just kind of the Haiti bug caught me. And
when I came in this morning, Jerry Perch, the owner of Arabica, said some of the artwork is actually here. I haven't seen it yet. What do you have here?
Majority of what I have here on display is metalwork that's created in a little community of Port-au-Prince called Quatabouquet. It's made out of steel oil drums. And so this process is pretty amazing. They take a 55-gallon oil drum that was originally going to be discarded once it was empty. What they do, they flatten it out, they put it over a fire, burn off any oil and paint residue, get it down to that bare metal. Then they hand draw a design on the metal, and then they take a hammer and nail and pound it out and make this design. Basically, it looks like a railroad spike, this thing. It's about as big as your hand. They're hammering away, cut out the silhouette, create all sorts of intricate design work on everything like that, and then we bring that here to the United States to share with Americans to be able to sell it. That's the vast majority of what I have there. I also have a couple of bracelets. Those are made from cereal boxes, and they're made from clay that they collect in the Central Plateau of Haiti.
That's fascinating. A lot of things that people do. I mean, just you work with the tools that they have available and the items or resources that they that they have.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's a fascinating way to start our spotlight on Amherst. When you're out here, you have the morning shift usually here?
Typically, I work the morning shift, yes.
So people are going to be starting to roll in here any time now, I guess.
They are, yeah.
Getting ready for their Monday.
Yes.
Where you put a little... make it a little stronger of coffee for them on a Monday, perhaps. We started this by the my question to you about this 12-foot Christmas tree, getting back to the very beginning when
sure.
we saw this. Did they bring it through the small door, or did they decide to open the big door to bring it in when they were getting it in here today?
It's actually an artificial tree. It looks pretty real, but it took us about a day to put that together in between customers, and Jerry and I were the ones who put that up just on the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, we put that up. So got all the little pieces and parts and brought it down.
By the way, the proper term is permanent tree.
Oh,
see,
okay.
Artificial has this sort of like,
thank
you kind
for correcting me.
You know, fake.
I appreciate that.
So us people who have trees that are the same all year, you know, throughout the year, permanent is the more...
I'll remember that
robust,
for my permanent tree at home.
Robust way to...
Until a cat chews on the lights or a dog knocks it over.
Sure, you're going to bring a whole menagerie of animals to threaten the tree? By the way, if you do have a cat,